God, we thank you for the promises that you make to us. Lord, that you're with us, that you forgive us, that you save us, that you heal us, that you provide for us. And so, God, we are thankful to you and we worship you today as we contemplate all of the things that you've done within our lives. And we appreciate you not just because of the things that you've done for us, but we appreciate you because of who you are. And because you are who you are, we have a sense of purpose, of belonging, of peace, of hope, that we can endure the challenges of this life, that we can celebrate the victories in this life, and that we can lay all the pains and the worries of this life at your feet, knowing that you are faithful, that you are powerful, that you are our God. And God, we lift before you those who are dealing with challenges that we know, whether it be physical challenges or mental health challenges or just hurting or feeling lost. God, we lift those names to you right now in our minds. God, we pray that you would bring peace and hope to those who are grieving. God, we lift before you those who don't know you that are a part of our lives. God, we thank you that we can sing the words and mean them, that I am yours and you are mine. You are our God, and we are your children. And we thank you, Lord, that you hear our prayers. Amen. You can go ahead and have a seat. If there are any kids and families left, this is your last chance. Well, not your last chance, but just a reminder that we do have our family service that's happening over in the gymnasium where Pastor Sarah and Matt are leading. So we're going through the Gospel of John, and today we're going to be reading about a man in a crisis of faith. And this kind of reminded me of my grade 9 outdoor education experience in junior high. And you're like, wow, that's a blast from the past, Dave. Well, this is me in grade 9. I had really thick, flowing hair. I had amazing hair in grade 9. Like, that's probably my best hair year of my existence. And I just had a really good haircut. I don't know what it was. But so we also had this, I had this class that I took. It was, you could take options. And if you're me, you would take the options that give you the best chance at a grade with the least amount of work, right? That's not my philosophy in life, but that's kind of how I approach school at times, particularly in junior high. And so outdoor education was one of those ways because, you know, I would go camping quite often with my dad and with my family, with some friends. And so this camping thing, it was pretty good. Like I even taught kids certain survival skills, you know, like fire building and those sorts of things. And so I thought this would be an easy thing. So we had a lot of training and I was like, I got this stuff. I know what I'm doing. And it came to a time where we actually would have a camp out where they would take all of the class and the teachers, and we would go for a camp out. And so we went for a camp out in the coulees, which doesn't sound that great because it was like maybe 15-minute drive from my home down a steep dirt hill, and that's where we camped. And so it seemed pretty simple, pretty safe. It's like, well, this is going to be so easy. But we had to do something a little bit different. We weren't allowed to bring tents. All they gave us was a tarp. And they said, okay, you need to build a shelter with this tarp. And they gave us some training on how to build a shelter with this tarp. But I noticed the tarp had a few like little holes in it and stuff. And I'm like, man, if I was to pick a tarp, this was not the one I would want to pick. And And so we eventually defined sticks and logs to be able to kind of support the tarp and kind of drape it over and then tie it down somehow. And it wasn't working that great because, you know, I knew how to build it, but I had to work with three or four other people to build it as well, because we're all going to be sleeping in this thing. And as soon as we finished, the wind started to come up. Now, this is Lethbridge wind that came up in the coulees, right? And it just swept, and it was really challenging to keep that tarp where it was supposed to be. And then as soon as the wind died down just a little bit, it started to pour rain. And it was like a ridiculous amount of pouring rain. It was bothersome how much rain was coming. It was much, much harder than it's raining today. And the thing about it was that I was a little bit worried, because one of the things that they did in our training, and they had this horrible video, I think it was from the 70s, and it was about hypothermia. And it was a very alarming video about hypothermia, where if you get wet or you get cold at all, you could die of hypothermia. And if you fall asleep, you may never wake up again. And that was kind of the message of this whole thing. And then it was like, if you want to survive, you have to go into a sleeping bag with another person and feed off of their heat. And basically, hypothermia is this condition that we have where your body is losing body temperature faster than it can produce or recover that body temperature. And then you get into a hypothermic state, and it causes things like shivering, confusion, slurred speech. And this video just kind of increased my anxiety and awareness of the danger of this situation, that there's water, there's rain. If I get wet, I could get hypothermia. So I'm in this lean-to tarp thing, and the rain's coming down, and I'm like, okay, I think I'm okay. And then all of a sudden I hear this drip, 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 and it's right next to me on my sleeping bag. And I'm like, I'm going to be sleeping on a sponge tonight, a wet sponge. And my anxiety is rising and rising. And so here I have this drip that's next to my head, and it starts to drip even more on my head. And I'm thinking, God, this might be it. I might be getting hypothermia. And God, help me to survive this. And suddenly thinking, man, I really miss my dog. We had this great Dash Hound dog. He was so smart. His name was Snoopy. Love that dog. And I miss my bed. And I wouldn't admit this as being a grade 9 student, but I miss my mom as well at that moment, because I was like, God, I just want to be in my own bed. I want to be dry. I want to be warm. I want to be safe. And the thing is, they taught us about hypothermia. But the other thing, too, is that in the coulees of Lethbridge, they also have rattlesnakes. And that seems a little more dangerous, doesn't it? There's rattlesnakes and there's badgers. I've heard that badgers can take on rattlesnakes, right? And so, you know, these are some pretty dangerous creatures. But no, it was all about the hypothermia. Of course, none of those are out when it's raining. But I felt so much anxiety and so much crisis at that point, and I'm just crying out to God. And then at about 3 a.m., as I'm contemplating and not able to sleep and just worried about everything, there was one of the teachers that came around, and he's going from tent to tent, and he's checking on everyone. And the thing is, he seems a little bit confused, and he's got slurred speech, and I'm like, oh no, maybe he has hypothermia. And he asks if we're okay, and we say, it's a bit leaky in here. And then he starts yelling at us to get out, and because we're taking some of the kids home if you're wet. And I'm thinking, wow, buddy, do you need a hug? And Remy's like, no, I need you to start walking, but thank you for the offer, he said. And I'm like, okay, maybe he is okay. And so we had to make this trek up the hill. Like, we were dropped off by the bus that went down the hill, but now it was just a mudslide, so the bus can't come down. So we have to walk up this long hill, and it is so muddy and so slippery and so ridiculous, and we're so wet and so tired and so cranky and probably hypothermic at this point. And we're slowly climbing up this hill. It's one of those things where you climb up the hill, you take two steps, and then you slide three steps back. I don't even know how we made it. But we finally get to the bus. I'm thinking, man, I would not want to be this bus driver that has to be out at 3 o'clock in the morning, and this thing is going to be a mess. He's going to have to clean it before he takes it back to the yard. but we made it to the warm bus. And the memory that I have of laying in that lean-to, wet, cold, and worried, that I was going to fall asleep and fall into a hypothermic coma, crying out to God to help me to get through the night. And I think some of us can probably relate, maybe not to this particular situation, but we all have these moments within our lives that we would call a crisis of faith, where we're crying out to God, where we're in desperate need of God for something. And we're just like, God, I just need your help. I need you to help me through this. I need you to get me through this. And it's not that we have just one of these crises in our lives. We have many of these, sometimes big, sometimes little crises in our lives, of these existential moments where we're like, I need help. I need God. And it might be I need saving, or it might be I just need to know what I'm supposed to do right now. And I think it's important every once in a while to think about, what are some of the crisis of faith moments that I've had within my life, and to kind of reflect on those and remember those, and maybe even journal some of those so that you can remember them and come back to them. Well, today's passage is about an official who is in a crisis of faith. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, let's look at John chapter 4, beginning at verse 43. After 2 days, Jesus left for Galilee. Now, Jesus himself had pointed out that a prophet has no honor in his own country. When he arrived in Galilee, the Galileans welcomed him. They had all seen that he had done, what he had done in Jerusalem at the Passover festival, and they also had been there. So there's a fragile popularity that Jesus has with the people of Galilee. Jesus spent, in the last little bit of this passage, Jesus spent a couple days in Samaria, where there's this beautiful, fruitful ministry of people flocking to Jesus, and people starting to believe in Jesus because of the way he was able to speak to the Samaritan woman. And the Samaritan woman was a witness of what Jesus could do and what he thought and what he could bring towards the salvation of the people. And so Jesus had this beautiful time with the Samaritans, but only spent a couple days there because he was on his way to Galilee. And in Galilee, they welcomed him for all the things that he could do, but he was not really honored there because they knew who he was as he was growing up. Because, you see, each one of us grew up in a family system. Now, so for some of us, for everyone, it looks a little bit different to be in your family system. But there's actually family systems therapy, which if you're a family therapist and you have people that have come in because they're not functioning very well, the therapist is trained to be able to assess what's happening in that family. And as you make shifts within that family, you usually have a person who's like the identified problem, that everybody identifies as the problem, but then it's the therapist's job to figure out who is the actual problem in the problem. And so it's all of these things. So families are complex. Now, you think, well, my family is just simply dysfunctional, right? Well, it's complex. There's complexity within that dysfunction. Or maybe your family is functional, but there's also complexities within it. And I found that when I was 18 years old, I moved away from my family, and I moved from Lethbridge to Edmonton, and I would go back every once in a while. And I found that every time I went back, no matter how old I became, I would always default back into old patterns in my family system. And we all have that, don't we? Doesn't matter how old we are. We always kind of feel like a child when we're around our parents, even if we have a good parent, adult to elder relationship with them. But we always kind of feel that affinity sometimes, or some of that, not even the affinity, or some of the anger that wells up within us, of some of the bitterness and some of the hurts that we've had with childhood. And all of these things just kind of bubble up when we're around our family, even if we've been away for a long time. And we get back into our old roles, and it might be as the bossy big sister, or the emotional one in the family, or the distant one, or the over or underachiever within the family, or we might be the favorite or the unfavorite child in the family, or we might be the rebel or the peacemaker or the needy one, or the one everyone likes or the one nobody likes, right? And we have all these different roles that we have within our family. And to change that system takes a lot of intentionality. For some families, it takes a lot of therapy to be able to challenge that system and change that system. because it creates turmoil anytime we try to change that system. And that's just basic family therapy. And so for Jesus, Jesus grew up in this area. He grew up with a family. He grew up in this area of Galilee. And he is a prophet without honor because people know who he is. And he is a part of that family. But now he's changing the system, not only of his family, but he's changing the system of all of his extended family. He's changing the system of his community. He's changing the system of their religion, which was the center of their family system. And so here is the context that Jesus is walking into. So it's no wonder that he's saying a prophet is not welcome in his own town, has no honor in his own town, because the familiarity did not help the cause. The familiarity didn't help them to recognize not just who they think he is, but who he really is. And so Jesus does some signs, and he's doing lots of things that are catching the attention of those around him. And he was the Jesus they knew and were willing to be entertained by his talents, but they weren't fully bought in. You see, Jesus had these special skills that they were like, man, he's very intriguing. He's not what I thought he was. He's not just the little Jesus down the street, but he could do so much more than just this carpentry work that he grew up doing. And he seems to say some really intelligent words, and he sounds more like a rabbi than a carpenter. And so I'm intrigued by that. And it was lots of fun for them. And they were having lots of fun and entertainment with what Jesus could do. Because in that time, there wasn't much to entertain people in the first century with no technology. And just there was just work and family. That was basically it. Maybe you had some special food or something like that. But that was basically it. It was work and family. And the thing is, we are a society right now in this generation that is constantly entertained and looking for the next thing. We have streaming apps that would take years of full-time commitment to actually watch every movie, every clip, everything that is coming at us. There's no shortage of entertainment that we have access to in our generation. Isn't that amazing? It is amazing when you think about it. It's also a little bit scary because if we dive too much into that, we kind of lose a grasp on reality and relationships. Because you see, the global entertainment industry, generates about $2.9 trillion per year. $2.9 trillion with video gaming, film, and music, right? Now, those are not all bad things. There's, like, video games, I don't know all that. They can be challenging. They can be entertaining, right? The films can sometimes be absolutely inspirational, informative, but then music also is something that evokes emotion and is rich in culture and creativity. But the thing is, all of it is driven with that $2.9 trillion by entertainment, by being entertained. Sometimes it's numbing the emotions that we're ignoring in our life. Sometimes it's trying to not work on the challenges that we have within our family or solving problems that we have or whatever it is that we're avoiding. Sometimes we need to be able to have a little bit of break, and that's okay. But sometimes we're avoiding what we're supposed to be doing. And so that is what Jesus is facing with the people of Galilee, is that they want to be entertained. They want to see something cool, something fun, something a little bit different than what they normally experience. But all of it has very little depth. Entertainment and amusement does not develop depth in our faith and psychological well-being. Now, it can, but a lot of it doesn't. Because if we're looking at it just for entertainment, then we're just trying to, like, pass time and shut our minds off. But the thing about it is that a lot of times it can help us, but it definitely doesn't always help us. And it doesn't bring a depth that is something that it's just happening or it's there's not a lot of depth within the whole entertainment industry. There's artistry, there's beauty, there's all kinds of creativity that goes into it. And some of it does take us to a place of development. But it doesn't necessarily bring that depth because we have to take the time to be able to reflect and to process and to discuss with those around us to be able to figure out what's going on and how to interpret the things that we're learning and understanding. And we have to pursue development over time within our faith, which can't be always found, usually can't be found within the entertainment industry. And so there's little depth that the people of Galilee are pursuing with Jesus. They're just wanting to be entertained. They're wanting to see something cool, but they're not really being challenged in their faith and in their belief. And it's something that will likely fade quickly. It'll fade quickly. And I think sometimes when we have that crisis of faith within our lives, we're desperate and we're diving straight into that faith in Jesus and that faith in God. And then things kind of settle down a little bit. Well, we don't take the time to develop that crisis of faith and develop that faith a little bit. And what happens is it starts to fade a little bit because we're not taking the time to think of what we need to do next, but we're focused on what is the next best thing that I can be a part of. We're looking at what catches our attention as opposed to what is really important for me to deepen my faith and deepen my walk with Jesus. And that's the challenge that the Galileans were facing. And sometimes we approach Jesus with the benefits that we can get from him as opposed to the relationship that we can develop with him. Do you have a friend or have you had a friend in your life that they always want something from you? Do you have one of those friends or have you had one of those friends? It's like every time you're around them, it's like, why do I always pay for our meal? Why do they always want something from me? Why don't they ever ask how I'm doing? Right? I was a young youth pastor a long, long time ago, and I was a part of a church. I was a part-time youth pastor, part of a church, and it was kind of like this guy behind the scenes who would just work with the youth, and it was kind of that sort of culture. And so I kind of felt like I was a little bit insignificant in the life of the church. Well, then there was this gentleman who was one of the leaders in the church, and he invited me out for coffee, and I was so excited. I'm like, wow, somebody sees me. I'm so excited about this. And we go for coffee and we have this beautiful conversation. And it turns out we had some relatives together. We have some common people that we know and we're developing this great connection. And I'm so excited because I'm like, wow, I'm making a friend in the church. And this is so great. And then he said, well, Dave, I wanted to talk to you about something, an opportunity for you. Well, he wanted me to sign up for his multi-level marketing business. And I was crushed. I was crushed. I was so sad because I'm like, wow, I finally made a friend of the church and he doesn't want to be my friend. He wants to get something from me. And that was the last time we had coffee because I was like, no, thank you. And then he didn't want to have coffee with me. And I'm like, I guess there's just no point in this. But it's so disappointing when we have this person in our life and all they want is something from us. They don't want to have a relationship with us. That's very hurtful, isn't it? To think about not just what I can get from Jesus, because if we approach Jesus that way and every time we approach Jesus like, well, God, I need this, or Jesus, I need this, I want this, I want this, I want this, I need this, as opposed to saying, okay, Jesus, we don't necessarily ask Jesus, how are you doing? But to get to know Jesus as opposed to get to from Jesus, right? Who am I with? And as we approach our relationships within our lives, a friend who just wants to be with you, or a friend who wants to be with you for just who you are, who wants to be just with you as you are, and a friend that I want to be with and be with them just as they are. And the thing about our relationship with Jesus, it's not about just coming to him with a bunch of things and asking him for a bunch of things. And those are important things. He wants us to ask him. He wants us to come to him with the crisis and the challenges. But he also wants us to pursue a relationship with him. Just like we want to pursue relationships with other people, and we want other people to pursue relationship with us. And it takes work. And it takes openness. And it takes conversation and acceptance and mutual respect and love and service towards one another. And that's the relationship that we're invited to with Jesus. Verse 46, when once more he visited Cana in Galilee, where he had turned the water into wine, and there was a certain royal official whose son lay sick at Capernaum. When this man heard that Jesus had arrived in Galilee from Judea, he went to him and begged him to come and heal his son who was close to death. Unless you people see signs and wonders, Jesus told him, you will never believe. The royal official said, sir, come down before my child dies. See, the royal official, a bit of background on him. He had a high ranking within the influence of King Herod. And he was a court official in Herod Antipas's government in Galilee. And he was a person of influence who wanted something from Jesus. Now, so his approach to Jesus was, Jesus, I need something from you. That was his crisis of faith. There is a crisis that we enter into when we seek Jesus. Something is missing and we have a perceived need. For this man, his son was sick. He's like, please come and heal my son. I think you can do it. I hope you can do something for me. And that's the crisis of faith that the official entered into his faith with Jesus. There was a desperation where the son of the official is sick and will die without something miraculous being done. It was the plea and prayer of a desperate father, a desperate man. He's facing a difficult challenge right now. He's probably had doctors look at his son. None of them could figure out what's wrong with him. He's like, this is my last thing. I'm going to go see if I can find this Jesus guy and see if he could do something for my son. He's in a difficult or impossible circumstance and a place of absolute desperation. He has inner turmoil and anxiety that he can't control. And here he is forced into humility. Because here he is an official and he's asking this random uneducated rabbi who's actually a carpenter to heal his son. There's a humility that he had to approach Jesus with of taking a step down from all of the official duties to be able to be around Jesus and to say, hey, can you help me? And he had to ask him. And it was a risk that a social and an occupational risk of approaching Jesus to ask him for a favor. And it was likely full on humility as he approached Jesus. And that's how we have to approach Jesus. But Jesus' reaction was that he grants the request. But Jesus doesn't get overly involved, does he? And we'll read about that in just a moment. But the response of the official was with authority and certainty that Jesus could help. He knew that Jesus could possibly help him. He had heard stories about him, and he may not have seen what Jesus could do, but he knew that if Jesus, he probably would have heard that Jesus turned water into wine. If he can turn water into wine, maybe he can heal the fever of my son. He had a readiness to experience Jesus, as we need to be ready to experience Jesus. He had a repenting towards Jesus, that of not a repenting of confessing all of his sins, but a repenting of, hey, look, I really need this, and I'm entering this request with humility, desperate for you to do something, Jesus. And, you know, if this happens, if this is my encounter, I'm ready to change my life. Because that's what repenting. Repenting is not just confessing, but it's actually walking a different direction, the opposite direction of your sin. That's what repenting is. It's turning 180 degrees to be able to go a different way. And that's what this official was ready to do, but also to receive what Jesus was offering. He had to be able to receive. What's the point in going to Jesus and asking him for something if you're not willing to receive it? Right? You just want to blame him? No. You actually want something to happen. And so he was willing to receive. So let's see what happens. Verse 50. Go, Jesus replied. Your son will live. The man took Jesus at his word and departed. While he was still on the way, his servants met him with the news that his boy was living. When he inquired as to the time when his son got better, they said to him, yesterday at 1 p.m, the fever had left him. Then the father realized that this was the exact time at which Jesus had said to him, your son will live. So he and his whole household believed. This was the second sign Jesus performed after coming from Judea to Galilee. See, there's a transformative power that happens in our lives when we encounter Jesus, when we have that crisis of faith and we turn towards Jesus. For this official, it was the word go. Go. That was the transformative experience. The official wanted Jesus to come to his son, to come to lay his hands on his son. But Jesus says, go and your son will be healed. Just go. Now, imagine if the official said, no, I'm not going to go. I need you to come with me, and insisted on him coming with me. Jesus would have said, well, why don't you have faith? Right? Could you imagine if that would have happened? And sometimes we want Jesus to do something for us, but sometimes what's in the way is myself, or sometimes what's in the way is my intention or my timing of God doing something with me or for me. And what's the call to obedience that Jesus is calling us into? The call to obedience for the official was that there's a call that Jesus expected and expects of us as he expected of him, that we need to trust him, that he has our best interests at heart. And that's what the official had to do. He's like, okay, you want me to just go? I had this short conversation with you, this short interaction. I didn't even see you pray. You didn't even like lay hands on me or anoint me with oil or anything. And yet you're telling me to go and trust you that this is enough that my son will live. That took trust, didn't it? That took faith of that official who had no context of who Jesus was. And then there was the beauty of the timing. The timing of the healing is significant to the official. And timing is significant to us, that God has special timing in mind oftentimes, doesn't he? And for the official, he's like, when did the fever break? Exactly the moment that Jesus said it would. Exactly the moment that Jesus said it would. So he's like, I can't make this up. I can't argue with any of this. We need to believe in Jesus because he is a man of his word. He's worthy of trust. He's worthy of believing in. And it's wonderful. Like so many times I hear people saying, you know, I was doing my devotions this morning. And then I went to work, and on my way to work, I heard this other speaker on the radio or a podcast or something like that. And they just kind of affirmed what I had read in my Devo. And then I went to and had a conversation with someone at lunch, and it was just affirming of that Devo again, and how God has this beautiful way of sometimes interweaving these interactions that we have with him. And it doesn't happen all the time, but every once in a while we're like, wow, that was really coincidental, right? And we kind of like, oh, that was just kind of a blip, right? But at the same time, it might be that God is working and bringing messages into your life that he wants you to hear. And there's a beauty within that. And God has this way of timing things and imagining things and aligning things every once in a while. They were like, wow, God was really at work in that situation. And those are worth remembering, friends. And not discounting and not rationalizing, because really, it's about trusting Jesus and what he has done and what he is doing and what he will do. There was also a sharing that the official entered into. That it wasn't just about the official's son, but he believed and his whole household believed. What if this official had enough humility to go to Jesus, but not enough humility to admit to his servants, to his son, to his family, that he went to Jesus so that his son would be healed? He could have covered it up. He could have. He could have kept it to himself. He's like, I believe in Jesus, but I'm not going to say it to anybody else. But no, he didn't. He was like, this is cool. I need to share this time and time and time and time again, because God did this in my family. So imagine the conversation that he had with the servants on the road. And he's like, okay, so tell me, what time was it that the fever broke? Well, that's the exact time that Jesus said that he would be healed. Can you imagine that Jesus said it way over there, but way over here, my son just got healed by this guy, Jesus. I'm going to tell you about this. I'm going to tell you in detail what he looks like, what he said, what he did. Because guys, our lives are never going to be the same. We are never going to be the same. There was relief. There was joy. There was excitement. There was impact. There was this existential experience that the leader had to be able to understand and to know who Jesus is, what he could do. And to be able to trust him. And he's probably like, this guy can heal over distance. I thought I was going to bring him back home to be able to heal my son. To pray for him or do some kind of magic potion or something. But no, he just said, go. Your son will be well. And so I trusted him. And he's worthy of trust.
And he's incredible at what he can do. And I think sometimes we need to ask ourselves, do we really believe that Jesus will do what he said he will do? Do we believe it? Do we recognize when he does it? Do we recognize the answers to prayer that we have within our lives? Because we can give God credit for certain things when they kind of come together in a line. When things happen that are like, well, I can't really explain that, but it really happened and it was beautiful. But sometimes we're so tempted to minimalize and rationalize the answers to prayer that we receive. But we don't need to do that. We can give God glory. Now, here's the thing. Let's not be trivial about it and say, God gave me a really good parking spot at Walmart, right? That's don't waste God's time with that, right? Just park far away and walk, right? Unless you struggle with walking, then, you know, drive around a few more times, right? But there's something honoring to God where you found a good spot. At the same time, somebody else found a really good spot. We'll give them the spot instead of take the spot, right? It's like, well, God gave you that spot, not me, right? Those sorts of things. But let's not be trivial about what we need from God, what we want from God, and what God provides for us, right? But there are things within our lives that happen when we're praying for them, and suddenly we see this glimpse of an answered prayer. We see what God is doing in the person's life, and we're like, wow, that was really neat. That was amazing. Thank you, God, for doing that. Thank you, Jesus, for speaking into that person's life. Thank you, Jesus, for doing that in my life and helping me in this situation. And the other thing is that when we get through these crises of faith, much like the official had to do, if this is the only thing that he did to develop his faith, it probably wouldn't have lasted. It wouldn't have. But the beginning of that crisis of faith, or every time we have that crisis of faith, what it requires is some work, some discipline, some obedience to God to be able to say, okay, now I'm rediscovering the reality of God within my life, the power of Jesus within my life. What am I going to do with that? Well, I'm going to deepen my walk with him a little bit more. I'm going to take more time to pray and to read his word and to spend time with others who are praying and reading his word and discussing what they're learning and praying in his word. And then I'm going to share with others my story as I've developed this faith in Jesus. So just some things to reflect on as we close our time together. First of all, what do you need? What do I need? And what do I want from Jesus? Reflect on that need, express that need, and receive the response that Jesus gives to you about that need. Secondly, how has a crisis of faith brought me closer to Jesus? Have you experienced that crisis of faith or those crises of faith that brought you closer to Jesus? Reflect on those. It might be a situation or internal angst or a low point in your life where you're like, I've got nothing left. I need Jesus. Thirdly, where in my life am I needing to trust Jesus more? As I deepen my walk with him through that crisis of faith, is there a decision or a change or a relationship to let go? Or is there a courage to step out or step up or just faith to trust in him? What is he inviting you into to trust him more? Number four, who can I share the work of Jesus with? Who can I share the work of Jesus with? Which would be your story. It starts with your story, and that's a process. And sometimes we think that, well, how can I share my faith in Jesus? I don't have all the answers. I don't have the Bible memorized. Friends, I'll confess to you as a pastor, as somebody who has a lot of education to be able to do what I do not have the Bible memorized. Full confession. Most of my colleagues don't either. I don't think any of them do, actually. That would be a lot. There's a lot of words in there, more than the human brain can retain. And so I don't have all the answers either, just like you don't have all the answers, but you have a story. And the story that you have about Jesus is the answer to the question of who Jesus is. It's as simple as that. Your story counts. It counts. And if you think, well, your story is boring, well, no, it's not, because it's about Jesus and what Jesus has done in your life. That's not boring. So if you think it's boring, don't make stuff up, right? But share your story of how you experienced Jesus, and it might resonate with someone. So think about who you can share the work of Jesus in your life with, and then have the courage to do it every once in a while. And finally, how has Jesus shown up in your life lately? How has he shown up in your life lately? Is it in a conversation, in a friendship, Is it maybe a breakthrough in your health or in your life? Has he shown up to you by just giving you a word that just lands and resonates with you? It might be an encounter with a stranger. Something of how God is working in your life and how he's shown up for you lately. It's important to reflect on that, to remember it. Maybe even write it down every once in a while and share it with others. Will you pray with me? God, we thank you for this story of the official and how you just went way above and beyond in how you healed his son at a distance, testing him, encouraging him to trust you. And God, I pray that you would help us, that when we reach these crises of faith in our lives, Lord, that we would trust you, that we would turn to you, that we would seek you with our lives. Lord, that we would pursue you as you pursue us, not just for things that we can get, but for building a relationship with you. Lord, that it's not just about what we can get, but what we can do for you, to serve you and to love you and to spend time with you. Lord, help us to be a people who deepen our walk with you, deepen our faith in you. People who turn to you, people who ask of you, and people who give you glory and praise and credit.